Good evening and welcome to Sunday Showcase. I'm Damiano Pietropaolo. Let me begin by wishing you a happy and prosperous new year. And let me also warn you that you had better screw your courage to the sticking place, as Lady Macbeth famously said, for the first of our series of four plays meant for the darkest time of the year. Welcome to Winter's Tales. A winter's tale is best told on the longest of nights, by the light of a fire or flickering candles. Inside it may be snug, but outside there is a boundary that marks the scene from the invisible. Shakespeare, who always said it best, had this to say. A sad tale's best for winter. I have one of sprites and goblins. Come on, then, and give it me in mine ear. And there you have the shaping principle of winter's tales, psychological thrillers for the ear. Joining me to launch our Winter's Tales series is producer and director Gregory J. Sinclair.
Good evening.
Welcome, Gregory.
Thank you. Oh yes, let's get the cliches out of the way. You know, the sound effects cliches out of the way with the in
now,
the first 3 seconds.
What about this particular form of storytelling? Why are you interested in this so much?
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, in a way, this kind of storytelling was my introduction to radio drama. As a child, we lived in Montreal and had a cottage in upstate New York. And on the way back from the cottage on Sunday nights, we would get a bounce from New York City, from WCBS in New York City. And they were, at the time, rebroadcasting their classic series, CBS Mystery Theater. And I remember sitting in the back seat of the car, absolutely enthralled and absolutely terrified at the same time.
And tell us about the story we're going to hear tonight.
Well, we start with, a question. You know, do the sins of your past remain unanswered? And in this play tonight, it's called Someone Just For Me by Michael O'Brien. We meet Maureen. She was the leader of a high school posse of girls, the A-list girls who wreaked havoc in the lives of those who wanted to be a part of the A-list. We discover that one of the victims was a girl named Sharon, who was a little marginal. She was a misfit. And, maybe Sharon is having her revenge, or maybe, in fact, there's some other agency that's wreaking its revenge on Maureen for her misdeeds in the past.
So, without further ado,
here's Someone Just For Me, written by Michael O'Brien, starring Julie Stewart and Christina Nicol. Just a word of warning, the play you're about to hear contains adult situations and profanity and may not be suitable for all listeners. Your discretion is advised.
Grossman's daughter on the witness stand. We'll see who cracks first. Judge Atkinson won't buy his line of reasoning. I know he won't. I know his mind.
I know. Grossman's dreaming if he thinks he can put one past Atkinson. So, listen, why don't we...
Yeah.
Maybe you should get that. It might be Grossman's daughter.
All right. Just 1 minute.
Maureen Fraser?
Maureen.
Yes? Who's this?
You used to go to Queen Elizabeth School up in Lake Vernon?
Yes, I did.
You lived in that brown and gold house up at the end of Pine Street?
Who is this? Listen, I don't have a lot of time right now. I'm in a meeting.
Right. I forgot you're a lawyer now.
Yes, I am. What do you want?
Oh, yeah. You were always so smart, eh, Maureen? Yeah, you realize how many freaking M. Frasers there are in the phone book?
Look, who the hell is this? You know, I'm a very busy woman.
You don't recognize my voice?
No, I'm sorry, I don't.
I bet you remember my name, though, eh? Sharon Scott. You remember what you did? You still there, Maureen? How do you sleep, Maureen?
Listen. Whoever this is, don't ever phone me again, all right?
Who's that?
I have no idea. Anyway... Like I was saying, I know Judge Atkinson very well, and I don't think that he's about to buy Grossman's story, so we'll make that our plan of attack.
I agree.
Yeah.
So we'll just pick up from there tomorrow at 11 o'clock?
Yeah, that sounds good. Thanks for your help.
No problem. You know what I'll do? I'll call Grossman's daughter myself and bring her up to speed.
Oh, good. Yeah, good idea.
I'm taking a cab up to Young and St. Clair. You want to share?
Yeah, sure, okay.
All right. Let's see if we can find one. Taxi?
You didn't answer my question.
My God.
Why'd you hang up on me, Maureen?
Get away from me.
You and I have something that we need to talk about.
I don't think we have anything
right
to talk
about now.
Excuse me.
Taxi? How do you sleep, Maureen?
Do you know this person?
Just keep walking, Gordon. Find a taxi.
Okay. Taxi?
Will you listen to me, Maureen?
Oh, thank God. You got one.
God's sake.
My.
Don't worry.
Just drive, okay?
Oh, sorry, Mrs. Hart.
For Christ's sake, will you just go?
Oh, crazy woman.
Yes, that's what she is.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You know her?
Yeah, she's an old schoolmate. It's been one of those days. Sad, actually. Schizophrenic, I think.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to get a restraining order. Richard?
Maureen? Hi, honey.
What was that outside?
Well, I'm just getting up. What time is it over there?
I don't know. How's... England?
England is fine. Yes, very rainy. Thank you. You sound a bit stressed out. Is something wrong?
I don't know.
Come on. Something is wrong with
me. What's... Someone I used to know has contacted me, that's all.
Right. Oh. Old boyfriend. Great. Good
no.
For you. Thanks for calling.
No, Richard, nothing like that. No, listen. If someone that you hurt as a child came looking for you, what would you do?
What do you mean?
I mean, everyone did bad stuff when they were kids, didn't you?
Yes, I suppose I did.
For sakes, I was 12 years old. If she can't get over that, it's her problem.
What did you do to her?
Nothing. Ordinary stuff. Kid stuff. It was nothing at all. You should have seen her. It's not my fault. You can't make someone crazy. God.
What? Honey?
Someone's out there. Kids playing.
All right, look. Why don't you tell me the whole story when I get back next week?
Shut up.
Pardon?
Oh, sorry. There are these kids outside. You know, they should be in bed.
You're right. They should. And now, I have a suggestion for you. Finish that glass of wine I hear you drinking, take an aspirin, and you go to bed.
I love you.
I love you, too. Now, go on. It's late. Come on, get some sleep, all right?
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Come back soon. Shut up out there. Who's there? Who's there? Fraser.
Hi, it's Danielle.
Yes, Danielle.
Sorry to bother you, but something just came...
What? Who?
No, I said something came for you. It's a package. It looks like a videotape. There's no name on it. It just says the Clark Institute. Do you want me to bring it in to you?
Or? No.
Oh.
Meet me in the conference room in 5 minutes. There's a monitor set up in there, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. I'll just check.
Okay. Thanks, Danielle. That'll be all. You can shut the door behind you. Clark Institute. Figures.
Patient is Sharon Scott, female, 31 years old, paranoid post-traumatic stress disorder, tape 7. Patient is asleep. Patient complains of a strangling sensation, night terrors. Patient is unable to sleep for more than 30 minutes at a time. Observing sleep patterns under prescribed medication are Dr. M. Ramsey, Dr. H. Bergman, and myself, Dr. J. Singh.
Is everything okay?
Yes, everything's fine.
That was the videotape.
Yes.
I thought it was you. Is that something relevant to what we're doing?
No.
Is it something I should know about?
No, Gordon. It's nothing.
Okay. Well, anyway, our meeting's been postponed until later tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Hello, this is Dr. Singh?
Yes, speaking.
This is Maureen Fraser. I'm a lawyer at Nicholson & Barrera.
Uh-huh.
A package was sent to me this morning from your office. Could you please explain to me why you sent it?
A package?
Yes, a videotape.
No, I never sent anything to you. Wait a minute, what did you say your name was?
Maureen Fraser.
Are you acquainted with Miss Sharon Scott, one of my patients? Could you actually look at the tape? Is there a number on the side?
Yes, there is. 187253.
Okay. So she stole it and sent it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Maureen Fraser.
Yeah.
Your name keeps coming up. How well do you know my patient?
Not very well at all. We grew up on the same street in Lake Vernon, Ontario. Beyond that, I don't know anything
about... Well, she speaks a great deal about you. Miss Fraser, I've been treating Miss Scott for 2 years with medication and cognitive therapy. Time and again, we keep coming back to your name. This is all confidential, you understand, Miss Fraser, but I think you might be a great deal of help to me and to her. Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I think you and her are deeply connected somewhere in her mind. Do you think you could attend one of our sessions? We meet at 11 o'clock this Saturday.
I mean,
you don't have to if you don't want to. But I think it would be a great help.
Wait, yeah, okay, fine.
Great. I'm really glad you called.
Mm-hmm.
Maureen Fraser, Dr. Ramsey.
Hello.
Nice to meet you.
Why don't you text him?
Thank you for coming out, especially on such a rainy day.
Well, at least it isn't snowing.
No, but I prefer snow to rain at this time of the year. Anyway, thanks for coming. Should we begin?
Maureen? You know Sharon?
Hello, Sharon.
Hello.
It's nice to see you again. I'm sorry I was rude to you the other day. This isn't easy for me. I don't remember everything. It was a long time ago.
No. No, it wasn't.
Sharon, without becoming angry, can you tell Ms. Fraser what you remember?
Okay. I was 10. You were 12 and you used to have that gang. It was you, Debbie Fitzpatrick, Christine Stewart, 5 or 6 others. You thought you were so cool. You all thought you were so cool. You hated me. All of you did. I don't know why. I was never the prettiest or the smartest or anything, I know that. And yet you stayed away from me mostly, except when you wanted to do something mean.
That's very good, Sharon.
You don't remember that night? What you and those other girls did? It's 9 o'clock. After dinner, you knocked on my door. I know you remember. I know you do.
Hi. Is Sharon there?
Just a minute.
Sharon! She's such a cow.
That bitch gets fatter every day.
Shh. Here she comes. Sharon!
What do you guys want?
Hi, Sharon. We've decided you can be in our gang. We're going to our hideout to smoke some dope. Wanna come?
Okay.
There's something really cool in those woods. You've gotta see.
I'll go get my shoes.
Hurry up, and don't tell your mom, Sharon. Sharon, over here. This is our hideout.
It's getting dark out.
I know. We just want to show you something. Then we'll go home. Over here. Look, Sharon. Come on.
What is it?
In the grass. 5 of them. Gravestones.
Oh, whoa.
People must have died here 100 years ago. No one knows about them.
5 little stones, Sharon. Who are they?
No one knows. Go on. Read them.
I can't read the names.
Go on. Look closer.
I can't read them. They're almost worn off.
Well, whoever they were, they want you. They told us to bring you here. They speak to us. We're devil worshippers. Those people are in hell, and they want you, Sharon.
No, leave me alone!
Quick! Fucking grab her!
Wait! Don't!
They want you as a human sacrifice, Sharon! Hold her down!
Let me go!
Shut up! I'm tired of that tree. If you fight, I'll take the stick and flog you.
Ah! You're hurting me!
Shut up, Sharon! Those people were evil. Evil! The whole family!
Help! Someone!
You belong to them now. They want you all to themselves.
Help! Please, stop!
Draw the sign of the devil on her face.
Yeah, the devil.
Stick this dead bird in the front of her shirt.
Ah! Eat it, Sharon.
No!
Shut her up! Put this fucking tape over her mouth! No one has pity on you. Everyone hates you. No one wants you but them. I call upon all evil spirits, take this girl. You're staying here tonight, Sharon. All fucking night. Now, invoke the spirit. Let them come.
One, two, three, four. Pigeon's blood and rabbit's gore. Five, six, seven, eight. Here you'll die in a sage's gate. One, two, three, four. Pigeon's blood and rabbit's gore. Five, six, seven, eight. Here you'll die in a sage's gate.
Well, what can I say? That was a long time ago, Sharon. I'm sorry. I'm not that person anymore.
You don't get it. I stayed there tied to that tree for 17 hours. Until you untied me the next day.
I am sorry.
Those laces were tied really tight, Maureen. They cut my hands. I've been wanting to tell you this for a long time. Because you're the one who caused all of this. I never had a relationship. I've never had a job. I've lived that night every night of my life ever since. And you did that to me. You did that to me, Maureen.
Listen, I said I was sorry. Yes, I remember. I'm glad we've met to discuss this, but...
Wait. Just wait. Just listen to me. There's more. That night in those woods. Oh, God, I cried and I cried. It was so dark. I prayed that someone would find me. Someone would save me. Nobody saved me. No one took pity on me. But someone came. Someone came. At first it was just a shadow over by the grave. Remember, the littlest one? For a moment I thought it was a raccoon, but it wasn't. It stood up. I could see the shape of it. It was a boy. A little boy. I don't know. I think he was maybe 3 years old. And all around him was this cloud. I can't describe it. It's a black cloud of pure evil. And he moved into the moonlight. I could see his eyes black, sparkling, dead, like two gold marbles. And he laughed at me. Oh, God, horrible, horrible laugh. And he came up to me, and you know, even though that he was small, somehow his hands could reach up to my throat. And this horrible smell of death closed in on me, and he began choking me. Choking me all night long. And at one point, I heard him whisper,
"Someone just for me."
Sharon. You've never spoken of this before.
The next day you let me go. He untied me and I ran straight home. I thought I was free of him. I thought he was gone at last. But that night, I was lying in my bed. And guess what? There he was. I could feel him, his weight on my legs. He was there sitting on me, laughing. And he was there the next night, and the next night, laughing at me, strangling me. And that's how it's been every single night, every night, for 21 years.
All right, Sharon. Now I want you to stop. I want you to look Miss Fraser in the face. Don't say anything. Just think the word, forgive.
I don't forgive you.
Sharon?
So fuck you and the fucking self-help fucking book you wrote in on. I do not forgive you. It is not fucking good enough for me to say that you are sorry, okay?
I need you. Listen to me. I need you to free me. Please free me from him.
Sharon, breathe.
Look, I'm not crazy. I am not crazy, Maureen. Look, put that tape on if you don't believe me. Just play the tape. Play the tape.
Bring the tape.
Just go home and listen to it. Please, Maureen, please. Only you can save me from him. Please, Maureen.
Please listen to me! Bullshit. There's nothing on this tape. I played it already. It was a joke, Sharon, a goddamn joke. I can't help it if you're so... Get out of here.
I'll be right there.
Oh, honey, hi. Oh, it's cold.
Yeah. A lot of snow here.
Are you all right?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, the driver's a bit hellish, but I'm fine.
Well, they've been calling. Like, there are 26 messages from your office. They've been saying, get her a call as soon as she gets in. Honey, they said you just... left work? No.
Shh. They're overreacting. I just wanted to come and see you and Dad. Right?
Oh.
Yeah, I just wanted to start my Christmas break a little bit early this year. Listen,
okay.
I am going to take a nap before dinner, if that's all right.
Well, sure, it's all right. You know where your room is.
Mm-hmm. When's Dad going to be home?
Soon, I think.
Yeah. Okay. I love you, Mom.
I love you, too, honey.
Good to see you.
It's good to see you, too. You have a good rest.
Thanks.
I'll call you at 6. We're eating at 6.
Okay. Tastes good, Mom.
Mmm. Thank you.
Dad, you know that area on the north end of town?
Yeah, the woods where you used to play.
Is it still woods, all that area?
Oh, I think so. I don't go there very often. There's been talk about clearing it, you're building a mall.
Oh, that place. Mm-hmm.
I bet you got a lot of memories there.
Yeah, I guess I do.
That gang of girls you used to hang around with, whatever became of them?
I don't know. We went our separate ways.
What a bunch. Oh, you one by one, they're nice, but when you got together, look out.
Yeah, I guess we were pretty bad.
No, you weren't that bad.
Dad, did you ever hear about the gravestones in those woods?
Gravestones? I wouldn't be surprised if that was the first area it was settled around here.
Yeah. Was it?
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know much about it. Look it up in the library.
It's getting colder. Yeah, I think we're going to get more snow. That's what it says on the TV anyways.
Oh, you have to have the heat turned up so high, I'm burning up. I need to take a walk.
A walk? Maureen, it's 30 below.
No, it isn't.
You've had a bit to drink, honey.
I can take care of myself. Thanks anyway, Dad. I'm a big girl.
Well, put on one of your dad's parkas at least.
Mom. Leave me alone, all right? Five little
Are we the only ones who knew about them? I remember one stone. Tiny one. Nathaniel. Jesus, that's scary. Nathaniel carved on a little stone. Why didn't you call the others, Sharon? Why did you have to call me? Christine Stewart. You could have called her. I think she became a pediatrician. She's the one who whipped you. Put tape on your mouth. She was as bad as me.
Little retard.
And Debbie. She teaches high school now. She was as bad as me. And that chanting stuff, that was her idea, for Christ's sake. She used to carry a knife.
Let's kill her. Let's cut her throat right now.
You could have called Jennifer or Linda or Denise or Joanne. You could have called and blamed any of those girls. Why, Sharon? Why did you call me?
Give me that spray paint. I'm going to write something.
Hey, Maureen.
No, don't. I've got an idea. Get some rope and some duct tape. I'm going to get Sharon Scotch.
Sharon Scotch. Scotch.
Yes.
That's such a good idea.
Bring her out here. We'll tie her to this tree all night.
All night?
Tie her to the tree?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I know.
This is so great. Come on. Let's get her. Let's get the crap out of her. Yes!
It was mostly me. I was the leader, that's why. You know the worst part, Sharon? I told you I was sorry, but I wasn't. Then, or now. I enjoyed hurting you. I enjoyed watching you cry. Part of me even thought it was funny when you sat there telling... What do you want from me? There's the woods. I'm going out there. I have to do something.
I'm facing this. See, Sharon? Look. I'm not afraid of this. I'm here after all these years.
All right, where are those stones?
I'm not afraid of them either. They are only stones. Stones for dead people. Dead people are just... dead. There you are. All five of you. What the hell were your names, anyway? Benjamin. Jacob, I think. Bible names. Esther. Oh, that is a terrible name. Susanna? Can't quite read that one. There. There it is, the little one. Nathaniel. Hi, Nathaniel. How did you die? Babies died a lot back then. Was that you, Nathaniel, speaking on that tape? Go on. Say something. Try it. You can't, Nathaniel, and you know why? Because you are fucking dead. Because, Nathaniel, you are... All right, Sharon. I'll do it. I'm gonna do this.
Stop following her. Stop it. Stop it right now. She's afraid of you, but I'm not, so stop it. Stop it, you hear? I'm not afraid of you. Leave her alone. You are bad. Bad. Bad.
No, I don't know where she is. Well, she went out a few hours ago. Okay. Just hang on a sec. Is that you, Maureen?
Yeah.
Someone's on the phone.
Who?
I don't know who it is. Yeah, she's here right now. She just walked in the door. Yeah. Yep, yeah, okay.
Give me that.
Hello?
Thank you.
How did you get this number?
Look, I know what you did. I could feel it. God, all of a sudden he's gone. He's gone.
Well, good. I'm glad. Goodbye.
Maureen. Wait. I'm so afraid for you. No, I'm really worried about you. Oh, you don't know what it's like. His hands on you every night. And if you need someone to talk to, I'll be there. I can help you.
Listen. Never, ever call me again.
What was that all about?
It's okay. I'm going to bed. Good night.
A gravestone with a stick out of the woods. Oh, that must have been quite a picture. Ridiculous.
You've just heard Someone Just For Me by Michael O'Brien, with original music by Michael White. In the cast, you heard Julie Stewart as Maureen, Christina Nickel played Sharon, and Catherine Fitch was Debbie, Danielle, and Mrs. Scott. Dara Perlmutter played young Maureen, Alex Lai was young Sharon, Katie Lai was young Christine, Imogen Howarth played young Debbie, Anand Rajaran was Dr. Singh, Jonathan Higgins played Dr. Ramsey Richard, Jeremy Harris was Gordon, Lynn Darragon was Mom, and Bob Naismith played Dad and a cab driver. The recording engineer was Greg DeClute, with sound effects by Matt Wilcott. The script editor was Dave Carley, and casting was by Linda Grierson. The associate producer was Colleen Woods. The associate producer for Sunday Showcase, Monday Night Playhouse, is Rosie Fernandez. Someone Just For Me was produced and directed by Gregory J. Sinclair, who's with me here again to tell us about Trading Hearts at Half Calf Cafe.
It's written by Charles DeLint. Charles is an Ottawa-based writer. When I started looking at proposals for the series, I said, no, we're not going to do any werewolf stories. anyway, I came across this story, which is, in fact, takes the whole idea of the lycanthrope, the werewolf, and adds some very interesting twists. In fact, I would characterize this as there's almost a screwball comedy aspect to the story, which I found quite delightful. And you'd not normally think of a werewolf story as being an appropriate starting point for a comedy of manners, but that's just what Charles DeLint has very cleverly done in the story.
Well, you've certainly piqued my curiosity. Here is Trading Hearts at the Half Calf Cafe. It is read by Joanne Vanacola and Conrad Coates.
cherish each day. Single male, professional, 30-ish, wants more out of life, likes the outdoors, animals, seeking single female with similar attributes and aspirations.
Seeking single female with similar attributes and aspirations. Ad number 6592. You already tried that dress on, Sue told me. With these shoes? Sue nodded, as well as the red boots. And? It's not a first date dress, Sue said, unless you wear it with the green boots and that black jacket with the braided cuffs, and you don't take off the jacket. Too much cleavage? It's not a matter of cleavage so much as the cleavage combined with those little spaghetti straps. You're just so there, and it's pretty short. I checked my reflection. She was right, of course. I looked a bit like a tart, and not in a good way. At least Sue had managed to tame my usually unruly hair so that it looked as though it had an actual style instead of the head topped with blonde spikes I normally saw looking back at me from the mirror. But the boots would definitely punk it up a little, Sue said. You know, so it's not quite so come hither. This is hopeless, I said. How late is it? Sue smiled. 20 minutes to showtime. Oh, God, and I haven't even started on my makeup. With that dress and those heels, he won't be looking at your makeup. Wonderful. I don't know how I'd gotten talked into this in the first place. 2 years without a steady boyfriend, I guess, though by that criteria it should still have been Sue agonizing over what to wear and me lending the moral support. She's been much longer without a steady. Mind you, after Pete moved in, the longest relationship I'd been in was with that grotty little troll of a dwarf, and you had to lose points for that. Well, not that Nicky Wilde had been boyfriend material, but he had moved in on me for a few weeks. I think you should wear your lucky dress, Sue said. I met Pete in that dress. Well, true, but only the ending was bad. He had a lot of good times together, too. I suppose. Sue grinned at me. 18 minutes and counting. Will you stop with the Cape Canaveral bit already?
Just don't do the teeth thing and you'll be all right, Tyrone said. Teeth thing? What teeth thing? You know, how when you get nervous, your teeth start to protrude like your muscles pushing out and you're about to shift your skin? It's not so pretty. Thanks for adding to the tension, I told him. Now I've got that to worry about as well. I stepped closer to the mirror and ran a finger across my teeth. Were they already pushing out? I don't even know why you're going through all of this, Tyrone said. I want to meet someone normal. You mean not like us. I mean someone who isn't as jaded as we are. Someone with a conventional lifespan for whom each day is important. And I know I'm not going to meet her when the clans get together or in some bar. Tyrone shook his head. I still think it's like dating barnyard animals or getting a pet. Whatever made you so bitter? But Tyrone only grinned. Just remember what Mama said. Don't eat a girl on the first date.
Now don't forget, Sue said. Build yourself up a little. You mean lie? Of course not. Well, not a lot. It might help if you don't seem quite so bohemian right off the bat. Pete liked it. Sue nodded. And see where that got you. The bohemian artist type has this mysterious allure, especially to straight guys, but it wears off. So you have to show you have the corporate chops as well. I had to laugh. I'm being serious here, Sue said. So who am I supposed to be, I asked. Sue started to tick the items off her finger. Okay, to start with, you can't go wrong just getting him to talk about himself. You know, act sort of shy and listen a lot. I am shy. When it does come to what you do, don't bring up the fact that you write and draw a comic book for a living. Make it more like art's a hobby. Focus on the fact that you're involved in the publishing field. Editing, proofing, book design. Everybody says they like bold and mysterious women, but the truth is, most of them like them from a distance. They like to dream about them. Actually having them sitting at a table with them is way too scary. Sue had been reading a book on dating called The Rules recently, and she was full of all sorts of advice on how to make a relationship work. In other words, lie, I repeated, and turned back to the mirror to finish applying my mascara.
So what are you going to tell her you do for a living, Tyrone asked, as we walked to the cafe. The old hunter-gatherer line? Which worked real well in Cro-Magnon times. Hey, some things never change. Like you. Tyrone shrugged. What can I say? If it works, don't fix it. We stopped in front of the half-calf. It was 5 minutes to. I have half a mind to sit in a corner, Tyrone said, just to see how things work out. You got the half a mind part right. Tyrone shook his head with mock sadness. Sometimes I find it hard to believe we came from the same litter, he said, then grinned. When he reached over to straighten my tie, I gave him a little push to move him on his way. Give him hell, he told me. I'll be holding a single rose,
he'd told me. That is so romantic, Sue had said. Even with him sitting down, I knew he was tall. He had the shock of blue-black hair brushed back from his forehead and skin the color of espresso. He was wearing a suit that reminded me of the sky just as the dusk is fading, and the single red rose lay on the table in front of him. He looked up when I came in. If it had been me, I'd have looked up every time the door opened, too. And I could have gone swimming in those dark, dark eyes of his. I took a steadying breath, walked over to his table, and I put out my hand. You must be Lyle, I said. I'm Mona.
She was cute as a button. Here's my prediction, Tyrone had said. She'll be 300 pounds on a 5-foot frame, or ugly as sin. Hell, maybe both. I don't care how much she weighs or what she looks like, I told him. Just so long as she's got a good heart. Tyrone smiled. You're so pathetic, he said. And naturally, I made a mess of trying to stand up, shake her hand and give her the rose all at the same time. My chair fell down behind me. The sound of it startled me, and I almost pulled her off her feet, but we managed to get it all straightened out without anybody getting hurt. I wanted to check my teeth and force myself not to run my tongue over them. We were here for the obligatory before-dinner drink, having mutually decided earlier on a cafe rather than a bar, with the unspoken assumption that if things didn't go well here, we would call the dinner off, no hard feelings. After asking what she wanted, I went and got us each a latte.
Look,
she said when I got back.
I know this isn't the way it's supposed to go, first date and everything, but I decided that I'm not going to pretend to be more or different than I am. So here goes. I write and draw a comic book for a living. I usually have ink stains on my fingers, and you're more likely to see me in overalls or jeans and a t-shirt. I know I told you I like the outdoors like you said you did in your ad, but I've never spent a night outside of a city. I've never had a regular job either. I don't like being anybody's pet boho girlfriend, and I'm way more shy than this is making me sound.
She was blushing as she spoke and looked a little breathless.
Oh, boy. That was really endearing, wasn't it?
It actually was, but I didn't think she wanted to hear that. Searching for something to match her candor, I surprised myself as much as her. I'm sort of a werewolf myself.
A werewolf?
I nodded. But only sort of. Not like in the movies with the full moon and the hair sprouting out all over my body. I'm just... They used to call us skinwalkers.
Who did?
I shrugged. The first people to live here. Like the Kickaha up on the res. We're descended from what they call the animal people. The ones that were here when the world was made.
Immortal wolves.
I was surprised that she was taking this all so calmly. Surprised to be even talking about it in the first place, because it's never a good idea. Maybe Tyrone was right. We weren't supposed to mingle. But it was too late now, and I felt I at least owed her a little more explanation. Not just wolves, but all kinds of animals. And we're not immortal. Only the first ones were, and there aren't so many of them left anymore.
And you can all take the shapes of animals.
I shook my head. Usually it's only the ones who were born in their animal shape. The human genes are so strong that the change is easier. Those born human have some animal attributes, but most of them aren't skinwalkers.
So if you bite me, I won't become a wolf. You're probably wondering why I was listening to all this without much surprise. Well, not that I actually believed Lyle here was a werewolf, but the fact that he was talking about it actually made him kind of interesting, though I could see it getting old after a while. So, what do you do when you're not dating human girls and running around as a wolf?
Do?
You know, to make a living. Or were you born wealthy as well as immortal?
I'm not immortal.
So what do you do?
I'm an investment counselor.
Hence the nice suit.
How come you're so calm about all of this?
I shrugged. I don't know. I like the way it all fits together, I suppose. You've obviously really thought it all through.
Or I'm good at remembering the history of the clans.
That too. But the question that comes to my mind is, why tell me all of this?
I'm still asking myself that. I guess it came from your saying we should be honest with each other. It feels so good to be able to talk about it to someone outside the clans.
He paused. Those dark eyes studying me more closely. Oh, why couldn't he have been just a normal guy? Why'd he have to be either a loony or some weird fairy creature?
You don't believe me?
Well...
I didn't ask you for proof when you were telling me about your comic books.
I couldn't believe this. It's hardly the same thing. Besides, I got up and fetched one of the freebie copies of In the City from their display bin by the door. Flipping almost to the back of the tabloid-sized newspaper, I laid open the page with my weekly strip, Spunky Girl, on the table in front of them. This was the one where my heroine, the great and brave Spunky Girl, was answering a personal ad. Right from your life, they always say. I guess that meant that next week's strip would have Spunky sitting in a cafe with a wolf dressed up as a man. It's not so hard to prove, I said, pointing at the byline.
Just because you have the same name?
Oh, please. I called over to the bar where the owner was reading one of those glossy British music magazines he liked so much. Who am I, Jonathan? He looked up and gave the pair of us a once-over with that perpetually cool and slightly amused look he'd perfected once the cafe had become a success and he was no longer run ragged trying to keep up with everything. Mona Morgan, he said, who still owes me that page of original art from My Life as a Bird that featured the half-calf. It's coming, I said, and turned back to my date. There, you see? Now it's your turn. Make your hand change into a paw or something.
She was irrepressible and refreshing, but she was also driving me a little crazy, and I could feel my teeth pressing up against my lips. Maybe some other time. She smiled.
Right. Never turn into a wolf on the first date.
Something like that, I replied, remembering Tyrone's advice earlier in the evening. I wondered what she'd make of that, but decided not to find out. Instead, I looked down at her comic strip. It was one of those underground ones, not clean like a regular newspaper strip, but with lots of scratchy lines and odd perspectives. There wasn't a joke either, just this wild-looking girl answering a personal ad. I looked up at my date. So I'm research. She shrugged.
Well, everything that happens to me ends up in one strip or another.
I pointed at the character in the strip. And is this you?
I'm kind of an alter ego.
I could see myself appearing in an upcoming installment, turning into a wolf in the middle of the date. The idea bothered me. I mean, think about it. If you were a skinwalker, would you want the whole world to know it? I lifted up my gaze from the strip. The smart-looking woman bore no resemblance to her scruffy pen and ink alter ego. So who cleaned you up? The hurt in her eyes was quickly replaced with anger.
A human being,
she said and stood up. I started to stand as well. Look, I'm sorry. I began, but I was already talking to her back. I could have tracked her. The scent was still strong. But I went home instead to the apartment Tyrone and I were sharing. He wasn't back yet from wherever he had gone tonight, which was just as well. I wasn't looking forward to telling him about how the evening had gone. Changing from my suit to jeans and a jersey, I sat down on the sofa and opened my copy of In the City to Mona's strip. I was still staring at the scruffy little blonde cartoon girl when the phone rang.
On Sunday Showcase, you've been listening to the first of our four-part series of Winter's Tales, produced and directed by Gregory J. Sinclair. And once again, Gregory is here to tell us about next week's show. What's in store for us next week, Greg?
Next week's play takes a rather different approach. It's called Man Radio. It's an exploration of the psychological as well as perhaps the supernatural. This one is set in a radio studio where a shock jock by the name of Spaz Kellerman has this hour-long show.
Spaz Kellerman?
Spaz Kellerman. Well, Jeffrey, but he goes by the handle Spaz. Spaz has led a very storied life. And this one particular night, the callers to the show are not the usual assortment of wingnuts and insomniacs. Some are, in fact, people from Spaz's past.
From deep within his subconscious, perhaps.
Perhaps. In the meantime, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. You can send letters to us at the usual CBC coordinates, or you can email us at sunshowcase, all one word, at cbc.ca.
Thanks for coming in, Greg. We'll see you next week. That's it for tonight. Just a reminder that this program will be aired again tomorrow night on Monday Night Playhouse at 9.05 p.m. on CBC Radio 2. For Sunday Showcase, I'm executive producer Damiano Pietropaolo. Stay with us now for Katie Malick and Jazz Beat on CBC Radio 1. Good night.